Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, good morning, and good evening to all the listeners out there. My name is Kim, and welcome to Compassion Bikini. We are live with Blog Talk Radio. All you listeners out there, if you like to call in, our number is 347-637-3220. The number again is 347-637-3220. So tonight we have a very special guest. I am here with Michael Bruss and his wife Amanda in their family dining room, chit-chatting, talking about life, talking about compassion and how we go about changing the world. So tonight our guest is Mr. Michael Bruss. He just was awarded and honored with the award Teacher of the Year 2012 for his innovation and his ideas on how to go about in introducing education to promote learners and to improve the success of our teams in mathematics. So before we start, I want to share with you all our mindfulness meditation. So today's mindfulness meditation is brought to you by neuroplasticity. Neuro means brain connection, and plasticity means ability to heal, to mend, or to bend. The term first came about in the beginning of the 21st century by a group of leading brain researchers and Tibetan lamas and meditators. Many of us have seen those commercials of a pan frying an egg, showing what happened to our brain when it's on drugs. But do many of us know what happened to our brain when it does yoga or meditation? Here are some basic life skills that you need to know about your brain, and knowing this will change your life. Remember the term yoga mat. Y is for yoga. Yoga is a form of lifestyle that balances the mental mechanics, the physical movements, and the emotional states to work in unison so we could live in this physical body and to act at this present moment. Practicing yoga means being an expert in the breathing during the stressful situation or manage composure when you lose your cool. O is for organization. Try your best to organize your life with the healthy habits, consistent schedule. When things are organized, it's easier for the brain to function because we build more nerve connections that can flow faster, stronger, and be calmer. G is for GABA. It is one of the basic neurotransmitters, food for our brain that is important to regulate moods, tone our muscles, and build brain synapses to make you Einstein, if you wish. Studies have shown that happy, healthy meditators have higher levels of GABA. in their bloodstream compared to people who are stressed and depressed. So be in awe or om for your GABA. A is for activities. Keep your brain trained by being active and go learn a new skill. One of the most challenging and difficult training is to be still with a perfectly clear mind. It means sitting still, listening to nature, and not your chattering thoughts. M is for mindfulness. Like this mindfulness meditation, we try to give you the wisdom for your mind so you can alter, change, bend your mind like plastic to bring happiness in your heart and breath of fresh air in your life. Another A is for attitude. We all know that positive, joyful, and grateful attitudes not only bring the quantity of years to your life, but more importantly, it improves the quality of life. Research showed that when a person who are stressed or in constant flight or fight mode have higher level of anxiety, rapid breathing, and accelerated heart rate. If the body is in a chronic sympathetic system over a long period of time, then it will be very difficult to reconnect to the parasympathetic, which is the rest and the relaxation mode. Thus, do yourself an attitude check to see what system you are turning on in your body. P is for protection and programming. Use helmets or head protection when participating in any activities to prevent brain from getting injured. And now it's time for you to program your brain by bending, mending for good health, great life, and an attitude of gratitude. So this is Kim with the mindfulness meditation. Let's find your own yoga mat with the spirit and strength. And here we have today, tonight, and this evening, Mr. Michael Bruss talking about changing the neuroplasticity on mathematics. So, Michael, Mr. Bruss, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been teaching? How did you get into teaching? What inspired you to become a teacher?
Yeah, thanks for having me tonight, Kim. I appreciate it. I'm basically from Dayton, Ohio, and I wanted to be a teacher pretty much my whole life. So I studied at Miami University, taught in North Carolina for a while, and was lucky enough to join up with Dodds and have been able to move around the world a little bit, working with the military bases and teaching the children there. And it's been a fantastic ride with Dodds. Really enjoyed it. And now I'm 10 years in with Dodds. So here I am at Kaiserslautern and Ramstein High School.
Teaching mathematics. So what does mathematics mean? What is mathematics?
So mathematics, essentially, a lot of it is just thinking logically and a lot to do with number sense. Which some kids today tend to struggle with, the whole idea of number sense, and then putting together in kind of a new way for them. By the time it's high school, now we're looking at, you know, going through the logic process of putting things together and finding solutions.
So what is this new learning style that you're teaching that is so innovative?
So what we have here, I've worked with two of my colleagues that I've been friends with for a while, Corey Sullivan and Tim Kelly, and they're fantastic. Tim actually won this really nice math award and sat next to a guy on a bus who talked about he videotaped his classes, and that was the homework. The students would watch the videotapes, and that way he was a chemistry teacher. They could come in and do labs so that they didn't have to go over any of the things. They already saw the lecture. They had time to do the labs. So at first when he told us this idea, we thought, oh, this is crazy. That's so silly. Kids don't do homework anyway in the high school level. So what we did is, like, after a while, kind of, like, oh, this would be good. My friend Corey and I were really working on mastery learning.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of, okay, here's what you need to know to be successful, breaking it down to each individual skill and making sure that students would learn each skill needed. That way there were no holes in their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We had decent success, but the problem we found is we've really targeted students who struggle in mathematics, is that we couldn't get them to come in to pass these mastery checks.
Uh-huh.
They were okay taking a D, you know.
Uh-huh.
D is for degree or whatever, it's for credit. Uh-huh. So they were passing, happy with a D, and we were not happy. Eventually catches up to them, so many holes, sinks the ship. So after a while, they were unable to stay with us.
Uh-huh.
So we kept moving. They slowly got more behind. And finally, it was the point where they could not do anything and they were failing. So unfortunately, we had a lot of failure. We had a pretty high failure rate.
Okay.
So, get me going here.
No, I mean, because of failure, you had to look for other options to find success. And, you know, that's huge.
Yes. And that's why we pinpointed these students. These are kids who struggle in math.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of easier to teach the upper level kids. They want to learn. They want to be there. But when you've been bad at math your whole life, you're not so motivated.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you hit ninth grade and you've never been successful at math, I mean, I understand. Mm-hmm. They have no success, no reason to like it. So we really focus on these students. And what we found is that, okay, instead of saying mastery is optional, it is now forced.
Uh-huh.
So we are forcing them to learn every single skill before they move on.
Uh-huh.
So what the videos have done, we took this guy's idea of the videos, that gives them the medium to watch that anywhere. So on their iPods, their iTouch, at home, at school, in the library, 24/7 they can watch our lecture. So we no longer lecture. We found out lectures were ineffective. We give them the opportunity to pause and rewind. You know, some students need that time and are too scared to ask in class.
Right.
So they can pause, rewind, and they can continually watch these lectures whenever they need them.
Uh-huh.
Then they go through a series of practice and some application extending to the real world. And once they've gone through all these steps, they're ready for their mastery check on each topic that we're learning. If they pass it, good to go. You can move on to the next section. If they fail it, they have to go back, practice some more, and then try again. So they can't advance until they've actually mastered every single topic.
So you only have this for only algebra, or are there any other subjects?
So we started with algebra. The first, that's a low in Dodge, that's a first class in high school. So we are now expanding it. So what we're taking this now to the next level is we'll do it for geometry, algebra 2, and math analysis. So our goal or our vision is that students who want to progress faster will just move ahead. They'll be like, I don't need to wait around for the class or anyone else. I'm good to go, and they will finish algebra, let's say, in February.
Uh-huh.
So we're kind of getting rid of this idea of one school calendar. It's like, when did you learn algebra? When you're done, move to geometry.
Mm-hmm.
So next year, for example, I'll have an algebra and geometry class where as soon as the students finish algebra, they will start geometry.
Uh-huh.
Ideally, whenever they finish geometry, they'll move into algebra 2. So kids, when it used to take 3 years no matter what to get algebra, geometry, algebra 2, now they may do it in 2 years or they may do it in 4 years, depending on what they're ready for and can handle.
So they watch it, and then they go to class, and you help them with their homework. So you're actually helping them one-on-one with the homework during the normal lecture time.
Yes.
Right?
So we found in lectures, you know, I would look around the room, and I tried to make them funny and crack jokes and all that stuff. And only maybe the class of 28, maybe there were 6 kids who I was actually lecturing at the right pace for.
Uh-huh.
Some kids were too strong. Some were too weak. Some kids were just not interested. So it turned out for us, we thought this was kind of a waste of time.
Uh-huh.
So what we've done is we've really streamlined our use of our time. So it's one-on-one individual with the student, and I'm only addressing what that student needs.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had questions on the video or on the practice or the application, they come in and they're ready to go, and they're like, oh, man, I really don't understand this problem. Mm-hmm. And I go straight to that problem one-on-one with them. We correct any misconceptions, and then they're good to go, and they can keep moving and progressing on their own. And I just circulate around the room, helping individuals on their individual needs at that time.
Awesome. So you know this is Compassion Dakini, and it's basically a show that recognizes people who are doing extraordinary things in their life and also to help promote positivity into the world and compassion into the world. And the question I always ask every guest, what is your definition of compassion, and how do you live out your compassion?
When I think of compassion, I think of like just the general caring for others. I think that the tricky part with compassion, I feel like, is really understanding and being able to relate to students or people in general. It's like, okay, what have they been through? What is their life all about? And being able to kind of, you know, visualize yourself in their situation, or like take that with a grain of salt and relate to them. So I feel like you can understand people better and have more compassion if you can truly kind of figure out what the people are like. And that's helped me with adults and I think immensely with students, is understanding their life situations and what's going on with them. Definitely can show more compassion and just relate. Even if I don't understand or agree with it, at least I kind of have a foothold and can appreciate it.
So what is your passion in life becoming a math teacher? What makes you want to become this great, awesome math teacher? And you won this very high honor award, you know, for 2012, the Years of Change. And you know how I just love to embarrass you.
You're making me blush. I know you can't see it, but I'm blushing, feeling awkward, nervous, sweat. Thanks.
So what does that all mean anyway?
Well, you know, the passion is definitely not for the awards or the accolades or anything like that. The passion is for the students, and it's like the more involved I get into it, the more passionate I get. So it's like I wanted to be a teacher. I always knew that. I always wanted to teach math. I enjoyed it. But as I get involved, you know, I started teaching calculus, pre-calculus, AP statistics, and it was awesome, and we had good success, and it was very fun, and I still enjoy it. But I just kept thinking, man, you know, I really want to focus my energy elsewhere, like on students who aren't as lucky to have been a strong mathematical background.
Uh-huh.
So then that's been my passion there. It's like I really want to help people who don't like math.
Mm-hmm.
And it's challenging, and it's very, very challenging. So that's been my passion. And through that, I've met a network of teachers. I can talk about it, kick around ideas. Like all of this is only because of the ideas that we've shared throughout
uh-huh.
the teachers that really I've met through my whole career. Is how can we relate to these students? How can we help them? What's wrong with the system? What can we do to improve it? So as I do more and more, it's like, man, I get more and more passionate about really helping all students, not just my class or this district. It's really all students anywhere. How can I help them be successful?
Mm-hmm. So if Bill Gates comes up to you and say, Michael, you know, I have this funding, and it's about $1 million, and I see that you have a very, very innovative idea, and I could help you with this. What do you need help in?
Need help in lots of things. I think with the money supply, first, I think I would go to Greece and go island hopping and hit every single island in the whole thing to really let it sink in. What is this all about? Once I was relaxed and good to go, then we could focus. But really, I really just want to start over. Like, what should the system be like? How should it be set up? I feel like our current system is really not designed to help teachers. It's not hurting them, but it's not supporting them in the way it should. I don't feel like our current system supports students to its max, or parents, or even really administrators. Like, there are great teachers out there. We're doing great things, but I think the system could help them out more. So I would like to see a whole change in how we view, you know, what is education.
Okay, what is education?
All right. So here we go.
Here we go. Okay, you know, I mean, you know, so if an 8-year-old, 10-year-old goes, why do we need to know mathematics? What is this all about? So tell us, what is this all about? Why do we have to go to school? Tell us. What is education?
Sure. And I think it starts at an early age. You know, this whole idea of learning, I kind of foresee this system of learning without boundaries. Like, you just learn. Like, that should be life, not just school. It's always learning, always getting better, always doing these different things. So I feel like what we have created, and to no fault, it's just we have this system where it's like, okay, you learn this year, and then you learn this next year. And if you didn't learn it, you get one chance, and we'll hold you back, and you can try again. And it's just, I don't think that's how people operate or work, or
uh-huh.
it's not real world. Like, I don't think it's the best system for us.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like everybody's different. And this new system has really helped me see that everybody's different, who's ready for different material or concepts at a different time in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think at an early age, if a student is not prepared for material, all of a sudden they're like, oh man, we've got
mm-hmm.
a problem.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Hold them back 1 year,
mm-hmm.
but then we got to keep them with their peers.
Mm-hmm.
We got to keep them with their age grade. So, you know, I'm all about keeping with an age, but I would love to see just a totally individualized system so we can promote and go by age, but what they're working on is completely independent of anyone else. So
mm-hmm.
if you excel in mathematics and you're in fourth grade and you're doing seventh grade mathematics, that's awesome.
Uh-huh.
I totally support that. There's no boundary to what you can do.
Uh-huh.
If you're that same student in fourth grade and you're struggling at the moment with mathematics, maybe you're still doing some concepts from second or third grade.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I feel like you will it will click. Once you have the skills you need, then mm-hmm. I truly believe that you will catch up. At some point, I think it balances out.
Mm-hmm.
I think we frustrate students because they miss these skills,
mm-hmm.
and we always pass them along.
Mm-hmm.
And especially this idea of a D, just I think it kills things, because D really means you don't understand what's going on, but
uh-huh.
we're going to promote you.
Uh-huh.
So I just want to get rid of that. I don't want promotion based on, at the end of the year, you learn
uh-huh.
You have a D's worth of an idea.
Uh-huh.
I would like to see it based totally on progression. Where are you? How are you progressing? Where are the skills? Because especially mathematics is so linear, and so it builds, but I think it relates to every subject. You know, why move on unless you're comfortable with what you've been working on previously?
So you want to get rid of the A to F grading if you had a choice?
Well, I think it needs to be revamped. Essentially, yes. Like, it needs to be changed. And in my mind, it's more of how do we grade their progression versus how do we grade, you know, versus giving them a letter grade. For a lot of times it breaks into what kind of student are you, you
mm-hmm.
know? You know, are you a hard worker? Do you participate? Well,
mm-hmm.
You get a decent grade, you know? I want to be based on purely, do you know the material or not? So
mm-hmm.
you're progressing to this point. Say you happen to be the age of a fifth grader. You've mastered the material that is through that point, and you are a passing student. Like, we will give you the letter grade's obsolete to me because you have mastered and demonstrated mastery.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can work as far ahead as you would like. And if you're behind, then I don't know if we need to call you an F student. I would just say you were – somehow we need to come up with a way that says you're behind and you're not progressing as quickly, and hopefully we can get you back on pace at some point.
Uh-huh. So why is mathematics so important if a fourth grader asks you? Why do we need to study mathematics?
I get that question every day.
Okay, tell me. What? Why?
Mathematics is just everywhere, and it's currently now, like, when you think of employers and what they're looking for logical thinkers, and they're looking for strong math students. And if with our current system, if you look at the students who are successful at the next level, at the college level, they're the ones who do well in math. They take through Algebra 2 and have good scores, and
mm-hmm.
they can. It's a good indicator, but to me, it's the thought process. It's the being able to, you know, think logically and get the steps through solving a problem, but then understanding what you just solved. So it's more than just the steps. It's like, okay, how does this relate to the real world? What does my answer mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the whole thing of analyzing your solutions. And it's just, I think it's tremendously important to be able to think at the job or, you know, wherever you are.
So as we're moving to the next millennium and, you know, technology is going faster and faster and all these new things are coming up. So with technology, has it hinder us or help us as far as promoting learners to become better mathematicians?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And Matthew just has this debate all the time. It goes back to the calculator and things like that.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, undoubtedly, it's helped us. Like, technology is a good thing. It's a tool to be used correctly.
Uh-huh.
And when it's used correctly, it is amazing what we can do now from basic computation that we just don't need, you know, to spend time doing
mm-hmm.
versus some amazing programs that are out there and really being able to show things to students that it was difficult in the past. We can do quickly, visually. I think it's amazing. I think some of the problems with technology is that used incorrectly or inappropriately, now we have some issues. Like, sometimes, like, oh, this is cool versus this is effective.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I'm really interested in the idea of, is it effective? Does this help my instruction? Or does this help the student? Or is it just cool? So I think you have to be careful with technology. But I would say overall, definitely, I think technology has been a tremendous asset.
So you get this money from Mr. Gates himself, and you would revamp the system of grading, and you would revamp on how kids learn. Is there any other things that you would, be open to, ideas? What else? What else do you need if money is indispensable and you could change the world? What would you do?
I like it. So I envision a whole school essentially operating on this new system of progression. where it's just the technology piece would be integral to it. Like they would need access and with tablets or some way to watch the videos to pull up, you know, support in the classroom. But really it's this whole, beyond the money, I mean, it's the whole, like, you need to train teachers, you know, in this new idea. And let's show them the power of what's out there. Like, I don't feel like teachers are aware this is a new flipped classroom idea. It's new, especially this flipped mastery thing is it's very new. So they need to be aware of it. I think really we have to change our whole mindset. Like, it's hard if you talk to a teacher for them to imagine. You know, I envision it, if we take the high school, for example, in one classroom, there'll be 24 students. Maybe four of them are algebra, four are geometry, four algebra two, four of them are math analysis or pre-calc. Some are in AP calc, some are in AP stats. And I'm no longer, you know, Mike Rutt, the algebra teacher. I am a math teacher. And my job is to facilitate, and I walk around the room and I have to help and support each individual person as I walk around. Now they can help each other, and I'd love to see some, you know, multi-level students in farther classes helping, you know, kids along. But it really changes the whole dynamic of what is a classroom, and I think benefits. And there's just no, and things could just change instantly. Like, oh, you're tired of being in algebra? Like, let's work, and you will be in geometry. You want to do geometry kids? That's fine. You just need to progress through it.
So then, so say if you get a chance, an opportunity to meet President Obama and the next president-elect and all this stuff, what do you want to tell them? What do you need to let them know about the current education system? What do you like to see the change of 2012?
So I would hope that they can appreciate the problems we have as teachers. Like, I think one of the things that we've created is a place where it's just kind of we have to get through these certain standards in 1 year. So I don't think we're doing service to our students. Like, and don't get me wrong, teachers try their best. And we've tried lots and lots of different things. But the problem is students progress at different levels. So we've got our high-achieving students, our struggling students, our students in the middle, and even in there, there's different degrees of your normal students. So it's a whole different world. We're holding kids back from their potential. We are losing lots of kids because they can't keep up with what we're trying to cover. And then we've got that middle where we're kind of teaching to that's okay for some, but it's just not okay for everyone. So I think it should be individualized. Like, we need to say, yeah, we can keep these standards and these goals for each year, but we have to break it down to the individual learner. Like, it's, and now I think with technology, as I mentioned earlier, we're at that point where finally I think technology is so readily available. You know, why not have these great lectures from great teachers out there ready to go? You know, why not learn from the best people out there possible? Or why not go to these resources at any moment in time to have them? And I really think that if we stop losing kids early, it'll make our lives easier. Yeah, they may get frustrated and struggle through third and fourth grade. But wow, I just don't see the dislike for mathematics that I deal with in ninth grade. If you never struggled at it, okay? You're not so good at fractions. Well, we're going to spend extra time on fractions until you are good, until you do understand them, because that way you're and so then you can progress and be happy. You know, they don't see that that failure, and they're not labeling themselves or others as, oh, I'm just bad at math.
Because that's a big stigmatism, huh? Stigma, big stigma, right? Okay. So anyway, so Amanda, Mike's better half is here. And so Amanda, as a parent, if you have one question to ask here, what would it be as a parent?
As a parent. Why is math important? No.
I already asked that one. Try another one.
I'm just kidding. I think all parents want to know, how are you meeting my child's needs? And how is my child going to be successful in your classroom?
And I think it's a great question. That's fantastic. And that wasn't planned or anything. Setting it up for me. Appreciate that. you know, at first, and this has been a transition year, and some parents kind of freaked out. It's like, what? They'll talk to their students and be like, so your teacher, When is your teacher teaching? You know, that's not how I learned. You know, when I learned, the teacher taught to me and just lectured the whole period.
Uh-huh.
Watch what I do, practice what I do, take the quiz on what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think a lot of parents are dealing with. And so it's different. You know, it's not just watching videos. That's a minor thing of it. That's part of a bigger puzzle here, where the key is the mastery learning. And however we get that is the key. What I like to try to explain is, definitely, this is not a lazy system for lazy teachers. This is the busiest we've ever been. So making videos, helping kids, it is crazy time in class, running around, helping all the students, and it's well worth it. It's amazing. And like you said, how are you meeting the needs of each student? I mean, it's the data. I don't want to just make it data, but what I know about students. If I have a parent conference, I know so much more about each and every single student in that classroom.
Uh-huh.
I know what their strengths are, their weaknesses, why they make some mistakes. I know way more than I ever did about students because I work with them on a one-on-one basis, and I get to know them, and it's fantastic. So we have dealt with some parents, and they're a little concerned, and I understand that. We try to explain it. It takes a little while because it's so different. But then they're just like, wow, this is pretty amazing. And we've seen, you know, we have all the stories now of, you know, even kids are like, oh, man, I don't want to do this, because we've now shifted all of the accountability onto the students. So now it's not Mr. Bruss' fault. You know, oh, I didn't learn because it's Mr. Bruss' fault. He didn't teach me that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that anymore. Everything is 100% on each individual student. So if you're on section 2.4 and the class is on 7.5, that's all on you. Like, what have you been doing? You know, it changes the tables, and I will support you and help you, and I have support systems in place to progress, but it's a choice now that says, oof, I just did not choose to be successful in mathematics this year. And a lot of, especially previously, these students who got by with just enough, they get frustrated because now we're choosing. There is no more D.
Mm-hmm.
Either you pass and understand it or you fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a whole different world, and I think when you explain it to parents, they're just like, oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty great. So overall, the parent feedback has been pretty fantastic.
Wow. Awesome.
Thanks for the question, Amanda.
Okay, so now you get to ask Amanda a question about she's your spouse, the spouse of a math teacher. So any math question you'd like to ask Amanda?
Yeah. Why would you marry a math teacher? I'm just kidding. You know, that was a joke.
That was a
joke.
That was a kind of good question. You know, I mean, he won the Teacher of the Year, and we all know that he didn't do it by himself, so he has to have this amazing support group. So go ahead, Amanda. Why not? Let the public know who Mr. Michael Bruss is.
Okay, so why did I marry a math teacher? Is that what we're going with here? Okay. I married a math teacher because he is just, if you can't tell by listening to him talk, he's extremely passionate about what he does. And I can't think of anything more amazing to be surrounded by than somebody who's passionate about what they do every day. And you know, it's not like he's going to work. He goes to school, and he's learning every day, and that's amazing. And we have three small kids, and for them to see that every day, they don't even say, Daddy goes to work. They say, Daddy goes to school, and they know he loves it. And so it's his general overall attitude and enthusiasm and passion and persistence and his pocket protector. That's what it is. So
a lot of parents are going to be listening to the show, right? So they're like, how do I get my kids into your program? So how will it work if you have 1,000, you know, kids out there who wants to get into your program?
Well, I mean, you can't really at ramps not request teachers, but what we have done is like, it's spreading. It is going well. So we have a lot of teachers throughout the district, and especially at Ramstein High School, who are flipping their classrooms. They're going to this program, and it's the same process. They see it like, oh, that's kind of weird and different, and then it marinates for a little bit, like, oh, my gosh, this is the wave. And once they switch over, some excellent award-winning teachers in our district, once they switch over, like, holy cow, day one, they know this is better than the traditional method. So very successful teachers – are now switching over. So it's really catching on. I think a lot of schools, I'm thinking 5 years or so, I mean, it'll be more mainstream, I'm hoping, than just the traditional method. So I think there's a good chance that if you have a student in high school, you will be seeing it in some way or another.
So when it becomes mainstream, what will be your job be? What would be your job title? What do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
I see myself on a beach in Rota, helping Rota High School. I don't know if the principals are there listening. Love to be on that beach. No, I mean teaching there. No, you know, I don't know. I'm very into what Corey and Tim and I. And our goal right now, which is to get through algebra, geometry, and algebra 2. I'm looking forward to working with other teachers, including them on the few. Like, I want to keep this going. So I really want to be a part of, here's the high school curriculum. I had a say in it. I taught the chapters out of it. I'd also like to really get involved with helping teachers. I think this is the key. I think you can't just throw this on teachers or tell them to do this or why don't you flip. You have to want to do it. And it is challenging, and we've learned a ton. And I feel like Corey and Tim and I are very lucky. We have a lot to share. So I really want to work with teachers who are interested, not forcing, but any teacher is interested. How can we support you? What can we get you to do to flip? And I think once they flip, they'll realize that the power of it, and they'll be hooked. And then I think it will keep spreading from there.
So why flip? I mean, how'd you guys coin that term, flip?
That's what Aaron Sams is the guy, I think he's in Colorado, who started doing this with another teacher there, Bergman, I believe was his name. And that's what they started calling a flip classroom, because instead of watching a lecture in class, you watch it at home. So it's flipped upside down. You watch a lecture at home, you practice with the teacher in class.
Okay.
So what we've really added is just more than flip, and I believe these guys have experimented with this too, is this flip mastery idea. So not only are we flipping, I don't care when you watch a video. I don't care if it's in class, at home, on the bus. It's a mastery. So that's the most important thing. So really, I'd like to get this whole idea of an individualized mastery learning system where, like, each student must master it to progress. And flipping is one way to do that. I'm sure there are others out there. But we have kind of put one together here that has really, really worked well.
So are you planning it to move down to the elementary school, the intermediate school, anything like that?
Yes, that's definitely the goal. Like, we just met with some middle school teachers, actually on the last day of school, and they were excited about this opportunity. I think it fits perfectly for middle school. I'd like to push it down even further into, like, third and fourth grade to see what happens there. And I think that's what will happen. I think it will keep getting, you know, maybe it starts at the high school, but we'll work it down to those levels because I think it's a game changer. You know, if kids came into high school and they could do fractions, oh my goodness, it would change everything. So and why not, you know, why struggle with fractions from fifth grade to 12th grade? Why not learn them in fifth grade? If you don't in fifth grade, stick with them in sixth grade until you learn them, and then they're done, then you've got it, and it'll make the rest of your life easier mathematically anyway.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for sharing your home with me and allow me to come over and chit-chat and share a little bit of your life with all the listeners out there. So are there any last-minute words of wisdom that you like to share with us, Mr. Bruss, Michael Bruss? Any? Not as a teacher.
Oh. I'm in the teacher mode right now. That's all I got.
Remember? Neuroplasticity, changing the brain around. Everything is plastic, right? really quick thing.
Sure.
Not as a teacher. Could be anybody. So what would your role be, and what words of wisdom you want to share?
You know, just what I've been going through learning in my life lately, it's just, you know, I always say it is what it is. It's just kind of how things are at this moment in time, and who knows what the future is going to bring, and it's not so relevant as what the past has. It is what it is. So this is where we are now and what we're doing, and that's been a tremendous help to just kind of say, oh, yeah, this is what's going on now. I don't know what will be in the future or what's going to be happening, but very happy with the now. Right now, I'm very happy.
Amanda, any words of wisdom?
Yeah, can you top that?
No. I think Michael Brass summed it up very nicely.
Eloquent.
Be where you are, enjoy where you are, and it is what it is. Live in the now. Passionately. Live in the now passionately. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
That's
good. Very nice. So, anyways, thank you so much for joining our show this evening, Tuesday, the June 19th. Tuesday, June 19th. So June is a month of joy, month of jumping into freedom, just a month, just a great time to spread your wings and fly. So, for all the listeners out there, thank you. I hope you enjoy the show and learn a lot. And neuroplasticity, changing your brain one synapse at a time. Good night for all the people in Europe. Good evening for all the people in the East Coast. And have a great afternoon for all the people in the West Coast. I wish you have an awesome week, and I'll see you again next week. Thank you.